101, a version 1 podcast.
Welcome to the 101 podcast, conversations about technology and innovation with some of the UK and Ireland's leaders and trailblazers. My name's Peter Gothard, and today I'm joined by Amandine LePape and Matthew Hodgson of Matrix.org, or the Matrix Project, as it's more precisely known. So, guys, perhaps we could start by finding out exactly what the Matrix Project is, if you don't mind explaining.
So, hi, I'm Matthew. And Matrix is a very ambitious project to build an open, decentralized communication network on top of the internet, something that can potentially replace email and possibly the phone network in years to come. It's about 5-6 years old now and acts as effectively the missing communication layer of the web itself. So the web is amazing in many, many ways. You can obviously share hypertext on it. You can build web apps on it. But there has never been a good open ecosystem for real-time communication, by which we mean instant messaging or VoIP or any kind of exchange of real-time streams of information. And that is what we're trying to build with Matrix as a decentralized protocol, as an open standard that anybody can build on to build messaging and VoIP apps which interoperate and communicate within a big global network.
So, Amandine, what's the sort of rollout or growth of this technology in terms of uptake from, you know, companies or organizations at this point?
So first, the network itself is about 14 million people, 14 million people that you can reach on it. They're actually talking across 40,000 deployments, 40,000 servers out there, which can talk to one another on these users are registered. In terms of companies or bigger users building on top of it, we've seen quite some companies building on top of Matrix. For example, Ericsson or Thales have been spinning up business units providing Matrix apps to their customers. But the most famous one, I would say, is probably the French government, which deployed Matrix across the board. And basically, each ministry has their own deployment with their complete control over it, their own security models. But yet the government employees can still talk to one another across the entire network.
Fantastic. That's great. So essentially, we're talking about something really that operates more or less like, say, Slack anyway. Is there any kind of distinct difference in terms of the service people are going to get, you know, for their business?
Yeah, no, there is a massive concrete differentiator, well, two ones really. One is the ability that you can run it yourself. So if data protection and data self-sovereignty is important to you, whether that's due to geographic reasons or business reasons, with Slack, you just have to shove all the data over to Silicon Valley and trust that they look after it for you. And for many, many use cases, that is just not acceptable at all. Another aspect is encryption. So on Slack, the data is stored on their servers unencrypted so that they can integrate it into various plugins and integrations and apps which you build into your Slack workflow, which is cool and fine for their use case. However, for Matrix, we built in industry-leading end-to-end encryption from the outset using a set of encryption techniques derived from Signal. And the beauty is that even the server which you're using to provide the service does not have the ability to decrypt the messages in your conversations when it's turned on. And in fact, we turned it on by default just this weekend at FOSDEM, the biggest open source conference in Europe. And now every time you start a direct message conversation, one-to-one conversation with somebody on Matrix, it uses Signal-style encryption. So these are probably the two most concrete end-user differentiators that, sure, it looks like Slack, except under the hood, everything has been encrypted so much that even the server can't get at it. And secondly, you can choose whoever you like to host it for you. And a good example could be Modular, which is the software as a service hosting platform that we provide as New Vector, so built by the Core Matrix team, which allows users to basically put in a credit card and get out a server which is specific to them. And they can point their own DNS at it, And a bit like you can buy web hosting or email hosting, it's providing matrix hosting run by the experts so that people can use it and host their communication themselves.
Another interesting one is that you do actually participate in this big network. So by default, once you set up your server for your company or your association or your friends and family, then you're not just stuck into that bubble talking to only your company and your friends and family. You talk to anyone on the Matrix network.
Sounds amazing. So obviously, it's an open standard. I'm interested maybe to find out a bit more about what, you know, in this case, open actually means in terms of the way that organizations, say the French government, can actually use this, you know, in ways that they find preferable to what already exists. Can we kind of go a bit deeper with how it works?
Absolutely. I mean, we have shamelessly ripped off the web, honestly, in terms of the governance model and the openness. Just like the web is an open network with open source implementations on it, such as the Apache web server and browsers such as Firefox and Chrome. And the standards themselves are completely open and unencumbered, published by the World Wide Web Consortium and the WWT Working Group standards bodies, such that anybody can participate in it. It is as aggressively open as possible. There is nothing proprietary, nothing patented, nothing encumbered at all. And that is precisely what we're doing with Matrix. So we have a standards body called the Matrix.org Foundation, which is a UK non-profit company, technically a community interest company. And we have the governance for the foundation baked into its articles of association. It has a two-level set of governance. First of all, what we call the guardians of Matrix, who are effectively the board of directors for the nonprofit, who are the safety net to make sure that our mission is upheld by the project, and specifically that we are building a open communication network for everybody, which is not encumbered, etc. And then subsequently, you have the technical spec core team who goes and actually defines the standard itself under the supervision and the safety net of the guardians themselves. So in terms of openness, we then publish the spec. The protocol itself is a whole bunch of HTTP APIs by default. Doesn't have to be HTTP, but we implement them as a web standard using normal web technologies that any old web developer will be very familiar with. And we then also provide open source implementations of these, both on the server side and on the client side. We provide a Python implementation, we provide a Golang implementation, and on the client side, we provide JavaScript and iOS, Objective-C and Swift, and Android as Java and Kotlin stacks, so that anybody on any platform can start building applications or using applications built on Matrix, as well as running their own servers. All of that is Apache licensed, so a very liberally licensed, a very liberal license for open source, which basically allows anybody to do whatever they like with it, as long as they give us attribution. They can use it commercially, or they can use it in other open source projects. And that is just how Open Matrix is. Finally, the network itself is what's called Open Federated, much like email or the web. It's just one great big global network. Anybody can hop on it, start running a Matrix server. You don't need any permission to do so. It's not private or closed, as, say, the phone network is. I can't just become a telco tomorrow. I have to go and join the PSTN cabal, for want of a better word, to get permission to participate in their network. Whereas our Matrix, it's like email. Anybody can just spin up a server and get involved. So I don't think it could be more open.
I think it's interesting to note that to define the spec, anyone can come and propose a change to the specification. The spec core team is actually a kind of guardian again of it and is going to review and decide whether it's worth implementing it, whether it's actually helping out the mission of Matrix. But it's like anyone can come and say, oh, I would like this feature to be part of the protocol.
I mean, governance-wise, it's slightly different to some of the standards bodies. So you often find a kind of industry consortium approach, a bit like you find in W3C, where you have representatives from all the big browser vendors coming together and arm wrestling over what the new feature is going to be in HTML. Mm-hmm. Or likewise, in the IETF, they have the concept of rough consensus and running code, where you basically need to have rough consensus across an entire room of people. They actually do this by humming. and going and judging the volume of the hum to see whether roughly people agree or not, so they don't indicate who is voting on which. Whereas in Matrix, we do have a slightly more hierarchical model. The Spec Core team is currently 8 people, including myself. And a lot of those people are those who created Matrix in the first place back in 2014, and they are the gatekeepers as to what does go into the spec. So it's an existing single professional team working together. They're not all employed by the same people, but it's very much a kind of expert guardian, not guardian, but expert spec technical panel who have to approve changes. So it's a little bit more of a dictatorship in a benign or benevolent sense than you might find in a completely free-for-all thing. But one of the things we wanted to try to get right with Matrix was the governance model. And I apologize if anybody listening to this is not excited by open source governance, but it turns out to be a really important part of making a project like this work, because we saw that many of our predecessors who had tried to build open communication protocols had failed due to being too broad in their governance, or trying to please everybody, or letting everybody have their say, or letting everybody contribute anything they like in, and it's quite easy to end up with something that doesn't actually ship and compete with WhatsApp or Slack or Discord or any of the proprietary communication tools that people use today.
Sure. So maybe I was wondering if there were sort of any examples of you know, things that people have come to your benign dictatorship sort of asking if they can change, and you know, have gone through the system and have come out, you know, maybe something we may all recognize.
Wow, good question. So the way in which the spec process on Matrix works is that we actually have a single spec. It's a big document, about 150 pages now, which defines at any given point what Matrix is. And you kind of have a similar thing with HTML, that there's a single version. This web page is written in HTML 4 or 5 or XHTML or whatever it is. And it's quite different to some of the other protocols out there, which have instead created kind of clouds of different modules with different features, and you can kind of mix and match them together, and it's never quite clear which version is the most recent one or what the best practices is. Instead, we just made what we call a kitchen sink monolithic spec that tells you precisely what you have to do. However, to evolve it, people from the community or ourselves pitch up and they write what we call matrix spec changes, or MSCs. And these are numbered, and right now I think we have about 300 of them in flight. And their life cycle goes from a proposal, then it gets reviewed, and then there's what's called an FCP, final call for proposal. And the FCP process says, hey, I'd like to propose to reject this or merge it or declare it obsolete. And if over 75% of the spec core team approve it, then that is resolved as the outcome of that update, at which point we basically throw the update away. So to actually answer your question, for a concrete example of where somebody has proposed something interesting, let me think. I've got like 300 examples to pick from. Quite a concrete and fun one was the concept of spoiler text, which we just didn't consider in the early days of Matrix. I don't think it was even really a common feature. The ability to send a message and flag it as something that you shouldn't show to people by default unless they do some kind of interaction to kind of unblur it and see what that might happen to be. And there was a community, I think, who were doing anime on Matrix who had got very used to this as a feature in whatever platform they were using before. And I think they were on Mastodon, the decentralized Twitter equivalent. And they just made a proposal of how to do it. And as it happens, that one has not yet been fully reviewed and merged into the spec, much to their frustration. But the fun thing is that clients can still experiment with it and implement it. And in fact, Riot X, which is our next generation Matrix client that we build in our day jobs, turns out to have implemented this anyway. So the other day, somebody sent me a message and it was physically blurred out and I could go and click on it, and then the mists parted and I could actually see what the secret message that they'd sent through to me. And lots of concrete uses for literally not spoiling the endings of films, or if it's content that might be sensitive, going and giving the user the opportunity to either opt into seeing it on their screen or not, or whatever it might happen to be.
That sounds like a really good use case, and especially because it won't be spoiling Marvel films, which obviously is the most important thing in the whole world. I wonder if we should rewind a bit as well, because you obviously mentioned that Matrix has been, you know, going or has been an idea since 2014. We should talk about probably New Vector as well. So if we could maybe hear a little bit about the background of both Matrix and New Vector, where they started, how they, you know, came together, how they work interoperably.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Thank you.
So, interestingly, the history of the team goes quite a long way back. Some of the people in the team have been working together for almost 20 years now and started as a startup somewhere in Chiswick doing SMS with part of the startup doing the Black Ops and specifically voice over IP, playing with voice over IP and messaging and this kind of things. And this startup got acquired in 2010 by a company called Amdocs doing mobile carrier billing. And at the same time, there was a French startup doing mobile app development way before Android and iOS were a thing. And the French startup got acquired like 1 month later, the British one. After 2 years within Amdocs, management realized that they had a really good voice over IP and messaging team in the UK and decided to bring it together with some mobile app developers in France. And we actually, Matthew and myself, created the Unified Communications business unit within Amdocs. And at the time, we were basically doing WhatsApp clones, white label, that we were selling to telcos around the world. So we did that for a bit with big customers like Singtel in Singapore, TIM Brazil. And it was going pretty well in terms of business. It was a relatively sane business. But the thing is, the apps we were selling in the end had like market penetration like 10-12% in some countries. And at the same time, WhatsApp was at 98.6% or something like this. Mm-hmm. So we sat down one day after an offsite and basically thought about what we should do with our lives, because we had something which was going pretty well, but then it was quite hard to deal with telcos, almost 2 years to close a deal. And we would never take over the world with WhatsApp being on the side and actually being the app that everyone was using. So we came to the management of Amdocs with an idea, which was basically providing an open standard for voice over IP and messaging on top of the web, and try to get one step further than email. And they accepted to fund this for 3 years as an basically R&D exercise. So we went non-profit, we went open source within this big company, which had never done it before, and progressed the idea until the day where Amdocs Arch Rivals started building on top of it. So Ericsson in their business unit for contextual cloud communications. And so Amdocs thought that it was a bit unfair that they were the only one paying the bill for technologies that their competitors were using.
Sure.
So we ended up managing to actually spin out to set up New Vector and hire the whole core team of Matrix. We ended up having a team which has gone through experimenting all the various standards out there with SIP and XMPP and building proprietary messaging apps, which had all the experience to actually think through it, how it was to use it, and be able to concretize the idea of what would be the ideal protocol from a developer point of view and which would solve actually the user's pain points. So New Vector has been around for 2 years, almost 3 years now. And it got some funding from VCs to grow and actually help the development of Matrix. And it's basically providing apps and services on top of Matrix. So the apps would be, for example, Riot.im, which is the flagship app for Matrix, and doing professional services to the various governments and companies building on top of Matrix.
Fantastic. So you did mention, yeah, it's 14 million services, 40,000 deployments. There's various people using this. I just thought for anybody listening who, you know, maybe isn't capable of crunching those sorts of numbers in context. How sort of is the, you know, the arguable world domination plan of this protocol and this idea kind of going? Like, you know, in terms of pickup, how is that 98% WhatsApp penetration versus what you've got? You know, how's that working out at this point?
I think a good way to model it is to compare it with other decentralized disruptive projects. And a very close analogy to Matrix and our relationship to the telecoms industry is looking at Bitcoin and its relationship to the financial services and financial technology industry. And the rationale is very similar. You take an old established incumbent industry like fin services, and you go and completely decentralize and shift the power away from the big silos, the big players, into the hands of the consumer, such that anybody can go and build on top of the resulting technology, whether it's an individual or a big player as well. And Matrix is just doing the same thing. Now, I think the Bitcoin right now has around 10,000 nodes, possibly 15,000 nodes on their network. And I think it's fair to say that we are not buying our hamburgers with Bitcoin yet. Mm-hmm. There have been a couple of attempts at it, but the whole thing has gone slightly off the rails with people using it instead for speculation and investment rather than actually as a usable currency. Whereas on Matrix, it's more like 40,000, so 2-3-4 times more than Bitcoin in terms of deployments. It's also growing at an alarming exponential rate. I think we tripled over the last year, and we're accelerating even faster than that so far in 2020. And it's really, so by that metric, I think we're one of the most successful decentralized or modern decentralized protocols out there. Obviously, there are old-school decentralized protocols too, like the web and email and the internet itself, which are possibly a bit more successful, but they've had a bit of a head start on us. And admittedly, we are, 5-6 years into Matrix now. If you look at the first 5-6 years of the web, it was about that point that it really started to explode. I think things kicked off from memory in 93, and it was by 98 that things were really, really suddenly exploding up into the first dot-com boom and then subsequent bust. Now, we're not quite in the dot-com boom equivalent for Matrix yet, but between France coming online in April of last year, Germany announcing a Matrix trial in their public sector just before Christmas, starting with the Bundeswehr, the Ministry of Defense. Also, the American government in the Departments of Public Safety and Emergency Management using it in production, in fact, using it to fight cyber incidents, amongst other things, and a couple of other governments in the pipeline too. I think we're starting to see real critical mass as Matrix is being picked up, both in the public sector and also in the private sector. For instance, Mozilla, the creators of Firefox, just switched their entire communication apparatus over from a mix of IRC and Slack over to Matrix a few weeks ago. It's a soft launch so far, but it's gone pretty well so far. Also, Wikipedia run a server. I saw that Red Hat run a server, except they don't publicize it, but it pops up occasionally on our radar.
But in terms of world domination plans, if you can call it like this.
it's a bit aggressive, isn't it?
Yes. The idea is basically that about 10 years from now, Matrix should be the baseline of communication. And our goal is that every smartphone would have a Matrix app installed, whether it's ours, someone else, or an existing app which ended up bridging to Matrix. We don't really care. What's important is that we have these completely open baseline that everyone would use. And when you want to message someone, you don't have to worry about which app are they using. Do I have their phone number? Do I have their email? It's just like I take the app, I message them, and they get the message. And if it's superpower user one because I'm chat geek and I'm trying to talk to my grandmother who is using a super simple one, it should just work. And that's really what we're trying to do.
Fantastic. Also, the data point that one of the world's largest OEM manufacturers for phones reached out and wants to integrate Matrix into their handsets, which in terms of a very step change, you know, it's literally what we set out to do, to take the good old phone network, which is, what, 130, 40, 50 years old now, and is still at the same technical quality that you had back then in terms of 8-bit sound and 64K channels and all the amazing low-fidelity GSM artifacts, which we know and love so well, and actually just leapfrog that with Matrix as a replacement to it. Actually seeing it happen in real life is both scary and kind of fun.
Okay, I think that's about all we've got time for today. But thank you, Amandine Lepap. Thank you, Matthew Hodgson. This has been the 101 podcast. My name is Peter Gothard. Thank you very much for listening, and see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the 101 podcast. If you would like more information about any of our podcasts or our guests, visit us at version1.com/1-0-1.